Project One is composed of multiple components, and there are multiple leaders of those components, and so we're going to take turns going through these slides. But I did want to iterate that there are a series of environments, and it's been remarkable the extent to which we've been honoring the importance of the environment for helping to sustain healthier behaviors, and yet we've been ignoring the home environment, the environment that we are most exposed to for most hours of the day. And how are we going to maximize our likelihood of eating more fruits and vegetables, exercising more, and avoiding too much TV watching if we don't configure our home environment to support those choices? So we've been going into home environments of the participants in our study and suggesting that they make some changes in the contents of the refrigerator and their pantries, and to place their exercise equipment by the door, the front door, where they can see it, and that they take the TV set out of the kitchen, since there's empirical evidence that obesity risk is increased by having the TV set in the kitchen, and making similar changes of that sort. What do we hope to improve by making fairly dramatic changes in the home environment? Well, of course, we want people to adhere better to the distilled guidance of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans as reflected in myplate.gov. We want biological measures that can convince the outside world that our behavioral intervention is having an impact. And so we're looking at pulse wave velocity and augmentation index as non-invasive measures of arterial stiffness, which are early in life markers of cardiovascular disease risk. We don't want our participants to feel deprived, so we are mindful that what we're asking them to do might entail a decrement in their quality of life. So we have to measure quality of life to see, does it go up or does it go down? If it goes down, we have to tweak the intervention so that their quality of life is enhanced, even as their risk of heart disease is reduced. Of course, there are other measures as well, including endothelial function and a variety of measures of metabolic syndrome that we'd like to minimize through this behavioral intervention. There are a number of study design features that co-leaders of Project One are now going to share with you, and they include formative studies such as focus groups and key stakeholder interviews. We also conducted a pilot intervention trial. All of this was in preparation for a major randomized control trial involving 120 intervention participants and 120 controls. You'll hear about them shortly. We're doing multiple assessments at baseline, 6 months, 12 months, and 24 months follow-up so that we can get an accurate picture of the magnitude and the direction of the changes that take place over time. And then ultimately, we hope to share these results with our community partners. The community has been very important in making contributions to the design and the carrying out of this study. For instance, they were instrumental in the promotores that we hired as community health workers to carry out the intervention. So we're now going to move on to the next leader of our team, Valerie Rellis.
Thank you. Okay, so one of our key themes is the importance of community involvement, and this is something that goes across all of our projects and cores and everything. And it was very important to have the community involvement in the development of our curriculum. And this started out in our formative phases, where we had two community focus groups. We were asking individuals what do they already know about nutrition, physical activity, and cancer education, finding out what more they wanted to know and what formats did they want to know this information. We also had stakeholder interviews with our community advisory board members, with some of the key community-based organizations, as well as community clinics. And again, asking, what are people coming to you for information? What are you providing? What are the resources? One of the key things that came from this formative phase was people wanted us to go into the home. This was not something that we were prepared to do. We wanted to try to make it less invasive, more phone calls and classroom work. But they said, no, please come into our home. We want you to see what our homes look like. If you're talking about a makeover of the home, this is our refrigerator. Show me now. What are we supposed to do? Once we had all this information, then we had a lot of staff input. So we needed to have our staff had been working in this community since 2004. And we have done a lot of nutrition education and physical activity interventions, and so we had curriculum already. But then we had to bring it all together and say, what did we learn, and how are we going to change it? We had interns from UCLA, Cal State University, Los Angeles, as well as Harvard, and worked with our students. And they pulled more curriculum together, did a lot of revisions, translated it into Spanish, and got a lot of pictures and information to have handouts and make our curriculum really good. So then, once all that was established, we did a pilot intervention, and we had five subjects in each of the arms, and in a three-month period of time, these individuals did all the questionnaires, they did all of the physical measures, the blood measures, were part of the intervention, so they had the home visits, they had the classroom, the one-on-one visits as well. And then at the end, we did a focus group for each of those to find out, what did you like, what didn't you like, how would you like the information disseminated better? And the main key themes were that they really enjoyed all the information they were getting. They wanted more. They were very hungry for more information. Some of the main changes that we made were maybe some of the order of how the classes were distributed. In our control group, we actually added another class because they just wanted more contact and wanted more information. That we had so much cancer information going to the control group that it was overwhelming, and so it needed to be broken up. We have lots of questionnaires that we want to ask because we want to find out where is our intervention making the most impact. And since we had a lot of questionnaires, one of the key questions of the focus groups was, was there a lot of burden to filling these out? These are all interviewer-administered questionnaires, but we needed to know, did you understand? Could you provide the answers easily enough? And so there were changes to the acculturation questionnaire. Was one of the most significant ones, and how things were translated. And we do actually have our surveys available for you to look at with Brenda. She'll have her computer and she can show you. There are in English and Spanish and are available. And then because the respondents said that they weren't that overburdened with the questionnaires, we decided to add one more, which is the dietary guidelines. And so I'm going to turn it back to Dr. McCarthy to talk about why we decided it was important to add this.
The MyPlate.gov messages came out June 2011, and from a behavioral point of view, they're an important advance in as much as they emphasize not the need to deprive oneself, particularly through caloric restriction, which in the long run seems not to work for 95% of humans, but instead to do things like increase the consumption of fruits and vegetables. You know, never before have Americans been told by the U.S. government that if you want to lose weight, you need to eat more. You know, it's always been eat less. And how is this possible? This sounds counterintuitive. Well, fruits and vegetables are, by weight, mostly water and fiber. You know, how much fatter are you going to get by eating too much, quote-unquote, water and fiber? You're not. And the room that is taking up in your stomach by all this water and fiber displaces the room that might have been available for more problematic food choices. And the end result, and Weight Watchers is testimony to this, those Americans who succeed in eating more fruits and vegetables, in fact, have a lower risk of obesity, not higher. So that's part of our task now, to convey these new messages. Eat more fruits and vegetables, eat more whole grains, switch to low-fat milk. The next slide, we'll have another leader of our group.
Okay, with the intervention group, we discussed various nutrition and physical activity topics. When we usually start the intervention with discussing the basics of health. So we go into people's homes, we discuss the MyPlate, and just get a sense and feel for what the participant knows so we know where to start with them. If we just start implementing things or, you know, telling them what to do and they're not at the level that they're ready to make those changes, it's not going to work. So we do kind of gauge where they're at and go with that to make those appropriate recommendations. We do emphasize the importance of reading the label. Oftentimes, many people don't use the label. They see it, but they don't understand it. As well as with the label, actually, we use many activities, hands-on activities, to get them engaged and get them interested in learning about nutrition. With this one, we do a food sugar demo and a fat demo demonstration to show them how much sugar or how much fat is in products that they consume. And this is, I think, one of the biggest and best classes that we have with them, because they get to realize how much they're consuming in their diet. And all of these things, you know, affect their health. And with this, they always take back the message to their home and share it with their families. And it's one of the ones that if you guys ever do use any type of educational component, use it. It's really interesting to see it with kids, and they really take it to heart, and they share it with their families. Another thing that we like to do is after they learn all these components, we do a practice on shopping at their supermarket, but we bring the supermarket to them in the classrooms, so they get to choose between not so healthier items with the healthier items, and they get to discuss why did they choose those particular items instead of the ones that they usually do eat. With the home visits, it's very important to engage the family in order to make a really sustainable, positive change. Oftentimes, we like to involve kids whenever we do any type of activities. One of the things that we do in the home is use the traffic light classification, which is using three different color dots, a red, yellow, and green, to signify different various levels of nutrition. And these are placed into food items. With kids, it's a really nice activity to do. It's easy to understand. The green ones are those foods that, you know, you need to eat a little bit more often. Yellow ones are the ones that are so-so. And then the red ones are those that you should eat less often or not even have that much. So with this one, it was really nice to hear parents say that that their kids, you know, would tell them, "Mom, are you sure you want to use that product? Because it has a red sticker on it." So kids are really, you know, getting involved and learning the differences between healthier items and not so healthy. With the telephone calls, it's just a reiteration of what they've been learning throughout the whole length of the study. And it's just reemphasizing the importance of certain topics. Here's an example of the traffic light system that we're using. So there's different color stickers and various products. There's, as you can see, there's just different items around there. Oftentimes people don't have containers for their food items, so some stickers some items may have a weird looking sticker, but it's because they use the same containers to store other things. And the whole key is to have, you know, the messy, unhealthy refrigerator and make it more appealing for the whole family to have healthier options.
Hi, so one of the interesting aspects of our study is that our control group is an attention control group. So we deliver a lower intensity intervention that promotes early detection of cancer, which is a big concern of the East LA community as well. And some of our collaborators and other people in our project commented some of the issues that the community is interested in, like social justice and involvement with environmental health, did come up during the formative phase of the study along with the pilot study. So we had to integrate some of the components and use those to bring people to to all the components. So we have two classes. Initially, we only had one, but again, as Valerie mentioned, we needed to add another one so we can break down the information in a way that is understandable to them and we can engage them in preventative measures. We have a total of four calls, and on top of just giving them education about these six types of cancer, we also inform them of community resources for screening that are low cost or free. And I know we're running short on time, so in the back we have a binder with the curriculum for the control group. If you're interested, feel free to take a look at it. I left my business card, email me, and I'm going to pass it back to Valerie so she can say her last remarks.
Okay. So the health of this community, unfortunately, is not optimal, but we know that. That's why we're there. That's what we. That's why we're working in this community. And we also knew that we might have some recruitment challenges. And many of our potential subjects don't meet the health requirements because this is a prevention study. And so we're looking for individuals that don't already have cardiovascular disease or diabetes. And one of the things that we have to do is a rigorous sort of paper screening first before we spend all the money on the lab measures. We've actually screened a lot more people at this time, but it seems to remain about the same, that about 35% of those that that seem like they're going to be eligible upon paper screening, in fact, are not. And then once we move to the physical measures and the lab measures, including the endothelial functioning test, we lose about another 1%. So where folks, they feel okay and they think they're healthy and find out, you know, you actually have diabetes, or we're showing that you already have significant cardiovascular disease. Then, once we enroll people in this study, we're also showing that, yes, they are at high risk for diabetes and cardiovascular disease. So 39% have elevated cholesterol levels, and then another 42% have a hemoglobin A1C that's 5.7 or greater, with 6.5 is the indicator for diabetes. So one of the things that I do want to say just that we do partner with Project 3 as well. So one of the things is all of these participants, they get farmers market vouchers, and we promote the corner store as well to help to link those projects together. The students that are working with the corner stores are students that are working with our Project 1 activities. All of our nutritionists, they're out there doing the education back at the corner stores. And it's been our focus the whole time to really promote the advancement of the community. And so since we've been in East LA since 2004, we've hired many folks from the community. In fact, the three of our registered dietitians, including Brenda, actually lived in the East LA community. And we've hired all of our recruiters, and just really getting folks to get those skills, and that's something that goes across all three. So with that, that ends our presentation, our whole presentation. So now we are open. Well,
you can open, actually.
Yeah, but should I just go to the next?
Like this? We don't have one, but it will close down something.
Okay.
All
righty.
Thank you. So I wanted to leave some time for, obviously, for Q&A, and, you know, for all of our interventions. We oftentimes will get, my colleagues and I will get emails and say, you know, I hear you're doing a corner store conversion. How much does it cost? Or can I call you and just pick your brain a little bit? And what I hope you're gathering is that it's not just something that's just, you know, something easy, or it's just about money or financing or how much should I put in my grant proposal. I mean, all those are very important questions. But I hope you also understand that to conduct these kinds of community interventions does take some serious thought and community engagement. So that said, we'll go ahead and take questions. Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Sure. Nina?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think with any social marketing or marketing campaign, the goal is a lot of it. So I think that, and it's not only a lot of something, it's changing so people don't get exhausted from the message. And this is why I think, as I talked about, corner stores being kind of a focal point of activity, it's just a really great message to get across. So I think that, you know, whether the social marketing is a poster or a voucher or getting kids to perform and do some in-your-face performance art at other cultural events in the community, or doing, you know, sidewalk art, or having contests in the community, or doing presentations at their school, or going door-to-door with flyers. This is a lot of work. And I think that from a human resource perspective, the conversion of the store is small. It's the market, social marketing, advertising part that's really big. So if you want to, Brent, you want to?
Yeah, can I just follow up on that?
Yeah.
So I think that one of the things that's been really fruitful for us is developing relationships with people like the Department of Transportation, Parks and Rec, because we have this work with the youth who produce all these community-driven social marketing videos. So those are all played at these big community movie screenings. Before the movie, they play these. We also have free bus placards. So at like all the bus stops, there's big, you know, East LA fruits and vegetables, go to the healthy stores type placards. And I think that was free of charge. And then we had,
The videos in the buses.
We have videos on the actual buses, so when people are commuting to their jobs, you know, they can watch the social marketing videos. We have print media all around the neighborhood, so we have advertising on the exteriors of stores. So obviously, you've seen the pictures of the stores; they're wildly different from every other corner store in East LA. Uh-huh. So I think cultivating relationships with people that can get your advertising out there at, you know, low cost or no cost is really something that you, in particular, could look into.
Because we're running out of time. Because we only have we have a lot of questions, and we're running out of time. I'm going to take another question over there.
Dr. Ortega referred to our project as an intensive one, and it is labor intensive because we are using promotoras. They're making multiple phone calls and home visits, and one can question whether this is a Cadillac intervention which can't be scaled up because of the cost. Part of the reason why we're collecting data at 12 months and 24 months is to see what happens over time when the promotora interactions tail off, which they will after a year. And then do we still see sustained effects afterwards? And part of the reason why we went into the home and not just simply provided the usual health education advice face-to-face over the phone or in group education settings was to get to this point of sustainability, to get the residents to realize it's not just a matter of change in knowledge or attitudes, it's also configuring your own environment in a way that you're comfortable with. Such that it becomes easier to make the right choices. Put the chips behind the cabinet doors and have the fruit and vegetables out on the counter. That, you know, from a behavioral economics point of view, makes it easier to make the right choice. Once they've configured it and tried it out, they'll discover for themselves that no longer do they have to be disappointed in their lack of willpower. That the environment, in fact, takes a lot of the work out of adhering to the dietary recommendations. But all of this is, you know, right now theory, because no one's tested it. So call us in another year or two, and I'll be able to tell you in more detail whether my theory is correct or not.
I just wanted to add that also some of the people who are participating in the study are allowed to bring a friend or a relative to some of the components. So sometimes even the community serves as an agent of change, and that kind of creates an environment for sustainability. So again, going back to choosing the community that you target.
I was going to say on the expense level. So our key expenses are the recruitment and the measures. Where when the promotors are trained on the curriculum, that part is less expensive. So it's having a staff person is your key expense to continue in the community.
Okay, I think we have time for maybe a couple more questions. I know some hands have come up. Over in the back in the red, you? Yeah. C- Can you stand up just so we can hear you to project? Okay. It's a bit of a mix. I'm gonna, because Brent has been palling around with Nathan, so he knows more about these corner store owners. But good.
Sure. So we have two just totally different situations. So the two stores that we worked for is one of them. The first one that we worked for, the green one, is owned by an Indian family, and they're actually not from East LA, but they are heavily invested in the community. And as Dr. Phillips said, they now see themselves as a community asset. So they're not from there, but they feel that they're part of the community. And then the other, the blue store, Ramirez, is actually owned by a local Mexican family. So they are local, but we work kind of with both. And it would be ideal if, you know, the store owners were always from the community, but in a lot of situations, from a lot of stores, that's just not, you know, the ownership demographic.
Can I just add one thing? And that was actually something that the youth brought up in terms of facilitator for getting involved, was that the fact that they said it was a store that had been there for a really long time, that was rooted in the community, and this is actually the store where the owners don't live in the community, but it was one which they recognized and had been there for a long time, and they had, you know, grown up going to. So even if they don't live there, just the fact that they're invested in the community kind of can foster enthusiasm.
Okay, we got two hands up, two questions left. And I'm just going to say one thing since I'm going to put my little pin in about the store owners, which is the Indian family that owns one of the stores, Yash. She's done a number of media events for us, and she always refers to East LA as her community, even though she doesn't live in it. And that's largely a result of the work we've been doing with her and her store. You had your hand up in the green. Go ahead. Yeah, I mean, I'll just say one thing, and then I'll let Dr. Prelip answer your question. But which is that's also very regional specific. So on the East Coast, for example, a lot of states you cannot sell liquor in corner stores, and so that's a very kind of California. And I know there are other parts in the U.S. where you can sell liquor in corner stores, but that's also another thing to be thinking about in your interventions.
You know, one of the things we're asking in our community survey is where they shop and how they identify the store. So we're going to be able to see if that changed over time, which is going to be very interesting. And calling this a fresh market or a corner store and just getting that message out of a little store with a big heart, all of the phrases we're using, it will be interesting to see if that does shift over time. But I think that from what Jeremiah was presenting, and people, how they perceive these as places where they're dirty or they're crime, it's, I think, all part of a larger shift in perception, which is part of, I think, the intervention.
And I know that we're sure I'm going to just kind of think of it as a liquor store that in a community that wants the stores we constantly pull liquor down for age minors. And I went to a corner store later that afternoon, and the man who sold me my chips and whatever pointed out that he was giving me a pure plastic bag. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's just like, I don't sell to minors. I want everyone to see what a minor walks out here with.
And that's part of your canvassing of the stores to look at illegal activity. That's part of what we do. You get the last question in the poll.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I used to be a student of the Chicago University, and I also went to USC, so I'm glad USC and UCLA work together. So my question is, you mentioned transit earlier, and this is burning to me the whole time. I rode the RTD everywhere, and this would be quick bus ride for you to kick off. And so I'm wondering, in your selection, you chose those non-metro roads, but right. Maybe would you reconsider choosing want to tie youth bus stops in proximity or site proximity to a store. They were, you know, so keen on the bus. And a big issue was shelter, the bus stops on shelter out, typically hanging out in a store proximity. And I got to know everyone, they got to know me. And there's a lot of talk at the bus stop, where am I going to get the next fresh food, or where can I go to get a sandwich? So would you reconsider doing this? Because that's what I'm considering doing, how far to get a very small landscape. Right? What would be the barriers there?
I mean, I would say yes, and I'll let you answer. But, you know, part of this experiment is not so much to determine location, but rather determine community impact. Because, you know, the state, at least when we wrote this proposal, now it's advanced a little bit more, at the state of the literature at the time, about it's only 3 or 4 years ago, you know, where people would take pictures. This is the store before, and this is the store after, and this is such a great thing. But we really, and Gittleson and there's some at Johns Hopkins and some and a couple other people at Temple University have done corner store conversion work, but the literature is still, in terms of the empirical, what we know empirically about the impact of corner store conversions, is still in its infancy. And I don't know if you wanted to say anything else about that. But it's not part of the experiment, but obviously something we need to explore further. But I think the first thing is to figure out, does it even make a difference in the behaviors? You know, all this work and effort, as Dr. Prelip had mentioned, you know, making it a top health policy priority for the county seems a little bit immature. You know, but because we don't really have the scientific evidence to suggest that should be a top health policy priority. Although we think it is, it's just because we're invested in it. All right, well, thank you everybody for coming. Enjoy the rest of your time in San Francisco.